Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, are you living in your truth? I'll bet you are. What? You're not sure? Is it really true? Are you being true? We're going to find out about truth. What is truth? How can we know we're living in our truth? And how can we do it better if we already are? And I believe you already are. And to help us do that is a woman who learned to live in her truth and wrote a book about it called Truth. Truth, My Synchromystic Journey. So, our truths happen synchromystically. Let's find out about that. And so let's talk to the author of this book, who's on the show, Nikki Norlock. Nikki, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you could talk about your truth. What a journey. What a book. Oh, my gosh. Oh, sure full of discovery and trials and adventure and great, I guess, trust, certainly adventure, and you took a lot of risk and discovered a lot of things the hard way and found out wonderful things the hard way. So let's talk about it. You know, it started out that you wouldn't even want to write a book about yourself. It all had to be fiction.
It did. I was terrified of me.
Oh, my gosh. I don't blame you, because look at all the things that you chose to do that got you into trouble.
Absolutely, absolutely. It took me a very long time to acknowledge the true beauty of the journey, to acknowledge that every choice I made along the way got me to where I am now. So the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it made me who I am. And I wouldn't change who I am for the world. So why can't I tell the truth of my story?
Well, but let me say that what you're saying sounds great. And tell me how many times that you wouldn't accept yourself nor accept this life and wanted even to be taken out of it.
I can't even count. To be quite honest, looking back, I can remember moments in certain years where, you know, I was so devastated by either the choices I made or things that had happened to me that I was praying on a regular basis for God to let me die. But I can't count the amount of times that I've done that. There's been so many periods in my life where I've just been completely crushed. Yet, through some kind of miracle, I have always had this immense support around me. And as alone as I have felt at times, there's always been something that's come into my life to let me know that I'm not alone.
And yet, it hasn't always worked out according to your dreams about it. I mean, if anything, you've had some devastating disappointments. So it's not like, you know, we take a risk and everything works out. If we stay true to ourselves, we have to understand the journey better.
Absolutely. And I think at the end of the day, you know, I look back now on it all, and I recognize that when it didn't work out the way I wanted it to, it's because the way I wanted it to wasn't for my highest good. And I think that's the most important thing to acknowledge, is that sometimes we can't, in this physical sense of things, see the big picture. We can't see where we're going to be in a year or 2 years or 5 years.
Right. So we're driving blind.
Yeah, well, we have to put our faith in something bigger than ourselves that can see the big picture, that does know what, you know, is for our highest good. And if I can't see it, then I have to put my faith in something else that does, and just trust that whatever's happening in this moment is happening for a reason.
But you weren't.
And that's now how I live my life.
You weren't. Yeah, now, right. But you weren't always able to make the highest good choices. Even though perhaps there's always a silver lining to our bad choices. And the silver lining is the lessons learned from them.
Absolutely. There were a lot of times in my life where I was trying to force things to go the way I wanted them to go, where, you know, I thought I knew the best solution for whatever problem I was having at the time.
We have to laugh about that because some of the decisions you made about what was the best way to solve a problem were sometimes, or once at least, illegal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I can look back at that situation now and knowing everything I know now, I know that in that moment, knowing what I knew, I couldn't have made any other choice.
I think that's always true for everyone, no matter how bad our choices are, that we're not awake enough or aware enough in our higher consciousness to know better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I carry that forward with me in my interactions and my relationships with others. I can't ever look at people now with judgment because I understand that wherever they are in the moment is where they're supposed to be.
So it's,
and that's okay.
So it's an expressway to forgiveness.
it's the most important thing you have to do in order to you know, learn to forgive and accept others is to first forgive and accept yourself.
Sure.
And it's probably the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life is learn how to forgive and accept yourself for who you are. But once you do that,
right.
You know, you just broken into the like you said, expressway to unconditional love. There you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, I guess what it is that if we feel safe within our own hearts, then we can trust forgiving people who could harm us.
Absolutely.
Because we can't be harmed.
Absolutely. And that's not to say I would never encourage somebody to stay in a situation or a relationship that is detrimental to their well-being. Certainly I encourage people to set their boundaries. If somebody is being abusive to you, walk away. You don't need to live that way. That's not acceptable.
Except but that you also talk about in the book of we are creating our own reality.
Absolutely. You know, so you walk away from that situation and surround yourself with people who encourage and inspire you and uplift you. Don't allow yourself to remain in a situation where somebody is judging you or being condemning to your choice of life.
Right. So actually, when we can find that whole ground to stand on, then we can know whether we're being good to ourselves or not in relationships where we need to forgive somebody. Because if we're not feeling on whole ground for ourselves, we're too vulnerable to be able to forgive anybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It has to start within. It has to start by looking at your life and seeing what is it about your life that makes you happy? What do you have in your life that you can be grateful for or appreciative of? What in your life makes you unhappy? And it takes time. You can't just wake up one morning and go, okay, you know, I'm going to change my life, everything right now, today, and expect it to happen overnight. That's not the way it works. It does start, though, with you making a choice that you want to live a better life, that you want to be happy, that you want to be abundant, that you deserve to be happy and filled with joy.
Right, but you found a moment in your life where you did turn everything topsy-turvy.
Yes.
All of a sudden, out of the blue, you moved to another part of the world.
It was it out of the blue, though? Was it out of the blue, or was it a long time coming? Was it a long time of preparation, of me going through different experiences and learning about myself, getting to the point where enough was enough, and it was time for me to make that change?
But it was a sudden change.
It was, and it did happen rather quickly. But again, it didn't happen overnight, and it still took a couple of years for me to really grow into that experience, for me to really acknowledge the power of the experience, because I did at first release the book as a fiction because I wasn't ready yet to say that this happened and this is what life can be. I thought people would lock me up. You've read the book. You understand.
Yeah, right. You took a lot of risk.
I did.
Yeah, and no matter how you look at how you prepared for it in the book, it looks more like, you know, you just upped and went, and you met somebody, a musician, and you felt that he could partner with you to travel to the other side of the world and become a somewhat of a revolutionary. Pretty bold thinking.
It was very bold thinking. It still is today, I suppose, on some level. But at the same time, I recognize that in that mindset, it was based on my desire for change, not just within my own life, but globally. And now doing the work that I do, I see change happening daily, and it inspires me to keep moving forward. So am I revolutionary? Yes, absolutely I am. But I'm not alone in that. There's thousands of us out there, and we're all working in our own independent way to make the world a better place. And I think that's the story. It's not just about me and my journey. It's about all the people that I encountered along the way whose sole intent and purpose was to make life better for others.
I think that's a big part of the book, is you finding your communities in the world, more than one, many communities that have loving, awake people who are ready to make change.
Absolutely, and you find them in the most unlikeliest places. That's the beauty of the story, is that you think you have to go out seeking individuals who are on the leading edge, that you want to hang out with people like Abraham Hicks, and, you know, they know what's going on. But I found really deep, insightful wisdom in just talking to ordinary people who were doing extraordinary things in their everyday lives.
In remote places, too.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what a lot of people don't understand. Is, you know, for instance, I live in New York City, and it's amazing how consciousness, how ego of our consciousness distorts reality, and how much power and awareness ego thinks it has and knows to dominate the world. And so when we look at people who don't speak our language, who live in very rural places, and many of those people don't know any better. I mean, they're nice people, but they are, you know, propaganda has distorted their minds. But then there are a lot of free thinkers, people who are really awake and know better, and actually struggle to find mutual voices and minds around them, because they are in remote places. You know, and then there are very wise communities. I don't know if the United States is, I think we're one of the least wise nations. You probably agree with that, right?
Well, I wouldn't say that that's a complete truth. I think that there's a large movement in the United States to evolve consciously. But I think that it's on par with a global movement. And so it's kind of difficult to compare. Certainly our perceptions of how things should be are a little different than perhaps some other people living in what are considered third world nations. However, we have a lot to learn from them with regards to what about life is valuable.
Sure.
I mean, we take everything for granted here.
Well, not only that, but we're very materialistic.
Yeah.
And a lot of third world countries, they don't have the material goods. They have each other, And so their truths are deeper in community and caring about one another. Where here we care more about our possessions.
Absolutely. But I think that's changing. I think there's a massive movement both within Canada and the United States for change in that area. And people really are focusing on basic fundamental principles of living, like loving, gratitude, forgiveness, acceptance. I mean, look at some of the things that our youth movements are doing right now with regards to equality. They've brought us further in the last couple of years than we've come in decades.
Well, the youth is our future, and they're so much wiser for their age than we ever were. And they need to be, because our society hasn't done a good enough job. The legacy is not a good one for them, and so they have to create their own.
Right. Well, we have to also acknowledge that our society did what it could with the knowledge that it had.
Yes.
Right? So every time a generation comes forward, they are coming with the amassed knowledge of the generations that preceded them. So it's not really beneficial to our growth and expansion as a whole for us to look back on our past choices, either within society or as individuals, with judgment and condemnation. That doesn't benefit us at all. Certainly with awareness to say, yeah, we probably don't want to make those choices again because it's not beneficial to us. But to get angry about it doesn't help us move forward.
Right. And you talk about in the book that you used to believe that a fight was needed, and now it's not about fighting, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. I encourage people to let go of that idea of having to wrestle evil to the ground. The thing about how this whole, I mean, we talk about manifesting our reality all the time, and it always makes me giggle when somebody says, you know, I created that, and I created that, and I created that. But that guy over there, I don't know what he's doing. I could not have created that because that's just whack. The truth is that it's all about where you put your attention. So we get back to a really old saying that kind of had an epiphany about a year ago, which is the road to hell is paved with good intentions. It really, really is, because when you have a good intention, that usually means that you want to help people, you want to feed hungry people, you want to heal people. If manifestation works the way that we are taught that it does, and this is like ancient teachings, if the universe, God, George, whoever you want to call it, caters to your soul desire, and your soul desire is to help or to heal, then the universe is going to create for you things that need healing, people that need help. You have to be very careful about your intentions. Do you want to feed hungry people for the rest of your life, or do you want to live in a world where there are no hungry people?
I love that.
Focus on how you word and how you energetically exude those intentions.
That's a great breakthrough that you're explaining in how we create our reality and how we use our language. And we probably could be talking about this for hours in pointing out the different ways that we see life that only leads to trouble.
Absolutely.
I remember a friend years ago came to visit me, and she said, she has a new boyfriend, and he's an anti-materialist. And I said, oh, you mean he's a materialist? She said, no, he's an anti-materialist. I said, well, you can't be anti unless you are, because it's all about materialism. And so it's getting your mind off of the subject matters that you want to be at war with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The key to making a better world is to focus on the positive things. So to look for the people in our world that are helping, to look for the people who are co-creating, collaborating, and just having a good time making solutions, creating solutions to things that have in the past been our challenges and our problems. Focus on those solutions. Focus your energy and attention on those things and you'll find more of them. Focus your energy and attention on positive people and more positive people will come into your world. Surround yourself with that which inspires you and uplifts you.
Right. It's how it encourages you. It's how we hold it. My wife is much more at peace than I am because she is so much more of what you're saying. I worry a lot. It's just in my nature, my human design that I do that. And so she's an incredible role model for me to not address the trouble and to look at the abundance in life. And to experience it from that place of abundance and prosperity. And if we can hold life in that form, then we don't have to worry because there's abundance wherever we hold it. For instance, for you, you know, you've had financial issues in your life because you've had debts that you've had to pay back, and you have physical issues. And yet you love your life.
I do. I really do.
Right. So what do you put your attention on?
Well, I can share a quick story with you, actually, that will kind of be an example of how this all works. Just recently on Mother's Day, now we've been living in a house that we absolutely love out in the mountains of Quebec. The younger of our two daughters was struggling when she moved in a few months ago with school and just emotional issues. We did some really intense love work with her, basically just, you know, loving her as she is and encouraging her and telling her that she could do it. She's made leaps and bounds of growth. And our intention was to purchase the home that we are renting. Now, we got an email on Mother's Day saying that they couldn't wait for us to purchase the home, that they, you know, wanted us to move out so they could put it back on the market. Now, my initial gut-wrenching reaction was, you know, my knees went weak and my stomach clenched and, you know, I mean, we just got our daughter settled in and comfortable and we don't want to leave this area. We love the people we live around. We love this area. We don't want to have her move school. All of that stuff goes through your mind as soon as something like that happens. Like, how could this happen to me? However, having lived through the things that I've lived through, I took a moment to be still, and in my head I was getting a very clear message, go see Francine. Francine is a neighbor who lives down the road and who has been tutoring our youngest daughter. She's a friend of the family's and kind of a mother figure to me because I don't have a mom anymore. So I gave her a call on Mother's Day. She's preparing a meal for like 15 people. And so she says, anyways, come on over. If it's important and it's an emergency, come on over anyways. It's okay. I'll talk to you. So I go over, and within 15 minutes, we had a new home, 5 minutes away from where we're living now. Now, here's the beauty of it. Her tenants of 15 years had just notified her a couple days ago that they were discontinuing their lease. So the home had just become available. It is bigger than the one we're living in now. The house that we're living in now, there were a lot of features that we were going to build onto it once we owned it. All those features are already on the new property, including a little balcony outside our bedroom. All the features that we love about this house are in the new house. The kids are going to have more space, and it's cheaper, and we have the option to buy.
Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful. Now, your book is called Truth, My Synchromystic Journey. So let's talk about synchromystic in the story that you just said. The synchronicity of it was amazing.
Yes.
And it's mystical because it was so perfectly beautiful, beautifully perfect.
It's mystical. It's a misunderstanding that we have around the word mystic. We believe that mystic should be reserved for spiritual leaders and shaman, but really mystic means one who desires and seeks out a direct communication and relationship with the divine. So anybody on the planet can be a mystic. The moment you seek out a relationship with and desire to communicate with the divine, you become a mystic.
Right. So, and the mystic means applying ourselves and appreciating the mysteries and how they unfold synchronistically.
Exactly. So learning through my experiences that the divine often communicates with us, not as directly as I just stated, saying, go see Francine, because that happens to me frequently now. But at first, it's often little signs and symbols that we recognize on a soul level that are kind of signposts on the road of life, and they say, hey, you're going in the right direction. And it's confirmation for us that's the way we do need to go in order for us to progress and grow. So that's how the divine communicates with us often in these synchronistic ways. Mm-hmm. And so to put the two together, it just seems naturally to me a good way to live. I mean, things just flow for you, and you might lose your home, but 20 minutes later, you'll have a new one.
Right. It's amazing how life can provide. And the more at ease we are with ourselves, the more we can hold ourselves in our wholeness, the more we can tune in to these synchronicities and pay attention to the flow, be in the flow more. The more I think that we bounce around in frenetic ways and fearful ways, the least likely we are to see the flow and feel it and know that maybe we should call Francine.
That's absolutely it. You know, when you're locked in fear and lost in fear, then you're not open to receiving the answers. And it's been my experience and the experience of many people that I've spoken to about this subject that once you allow yourself just to be still, even for a moment, divine will step in and provide you with the answers that you need. In fact, the solutions to your problems have already been created. The divine is just waiting for you to accept that they're there.
Right, and not to question the way that they show up and where it leads us that might surprise us and might not even be that easy, but it brings us to a better place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so we're coming to the half hour, and this is wonderful. You're such an inspiration, and your book is what a journey, and it's so beautifully done because it's so personal, and it's so involving, and you feel the, you know, all the different journeys you've taken and the lessons you've learned and how you've had to deal with them and where you've come to from all that. So it's the book is called Truth, My Synchromystic Journey. And your name is Nikki Norlock, so that's NikiNorlock. And you have a website, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. You can find me at NikiNorlock.com. I'm very easy to find. Of course, you can find me on Facebook as well. I have both my regular page and my fan page.
And you and I just friended on Facebook, so that's
yes,
wonderful.
Yes, we did. We just connected.
Yep.
That's awesome.
I know. I'm so happy. And thank you so much for being on Energy Stew. It's so great talking with you. You're a wonderful guest.
Well, thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Good. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.